Greetings to the crew of the Gaian Navigation Experiment, to friends and students across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on March 25th, 2012. This is the nav briefing number 5, and its title is Hetaira on Board. Those of you who've listened to the nav briefing number 4 know what's happening in the sky at the very moment these recordings are being made. A development in the sky visible to the entire world toward the western horizon at sunset. For some time now, people all around the world have been observing the presence of two bright stars in the western sky. They are not stars, but are in fact planets. The larger and brighter being Venus, which appears so because it is very close to the Earth, is actually within the orbit of the Earth and the Sun, the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. And the star, which appears smaller and less bright, but is physically much larger, Jupiter, which is located outside the orbit of the Earth. It's an extraordinary alignment. People all around the world who know nothing about astronomy, nothing about the Sophianic myth, nothing about planetary tantra, are stopping in their tracks, whatever they're doing, whether they be in the cities where they can see the sky on some occasions, the suburbs, countryside of farms and villages, or the remote areas of the world. People are stopping. They are being stopped in their tracks by this remarkable spectacle. And we among the Gaian Navigation Experiment can say, can smile as we look up and say, if only they knew, if only they knew what we know. And perhaps in some way, the knowing that we hold permeates by osmosis beyond ourselves. I am certain in any case that the knowing we hold, the realization of what we behold, does not rest with us alone. It is part of her perception. It is part of the expansion and awakening of the wisdom goddess herself. So I am recording this talk, nav briefing number 5, on the same evening as number 4. I just want to point out, I can't mention this too often, but I don't want to be tedious and repetitive, that almost every recorded talk on gaiaspora.org is closely time factored. You know this. We follow the recall of the wisdom goddess and her acts of divine alchemy in real time. So the navigator is plotting the course of correction by celestial omens. We are navigating by the stars. In the course of correction, as these events come up, I orient you in real time. We are the witnesses to the Nahual. We are the witnesses to correction as it unfolds. So those of you who listen to these recordings at the close to the moment I make them, or within a tight range of time, are direct witnesses to that of which I speak. This doesn't mean, however, that those who come upon these recordings in a week or a month or a year or even 10 years after the moment has passed will be missing something. It doesn't mean that the intel and the visionary depth and relevance of these talks has expired. On the contrary, it can never expire. It has a value today, now, for those who are the immediate witnesses to correction. By our witnessing, by our observation of her story, with imagination and observation of the sky, with our eyes and minds, by these acts we participate in correction in real time. But as witnesses to her supernatural power, we leave a record of our witnessing. And this chronicle of correction has a value that does not expire with the events under consideration. The chronicle of correction recorded in these talks and recorded in your lives, you crew members, the chronicle of correction in real time endures. It remains. And it is there to provide a legacy of instruction and guidance to those who come. To those who come into Sophia's way after the initial conditions of correction have been set. In these 3 years, from March 2011 to 2014, the initial conditions of correction are set, and we observe those conditions, and at the same time, we even participate in setting them. What becomes obvious under the omen of remembrance and the second omen that follows it, the omen of deliverance, is exactly how we do contribute to correction on her terms and according to her designs and purposes. And so our experience sets a precedent. And our experience as witnesses to the Nahual of Gaia set the course for correction for generations to come. They will enjoy knowing how we did this. They will be thrilled and delighted to read the account of what we are now undertaking. So with that brief prefatory remark, I'd like to launch into the subject of this briefing, which is titled Hetaira on Board. The word Hetaira is spelled H-E-T-A-I-R-A. Go look it up. Put it in your search engine. Hetaira. The word Hetaira is a word for invoking. It's a word of power and magic. Hetaira comes now as a revelation of that moment in correction when human awakening on this planet begins to coordinate very closely with the awakening of the planetary animal mother herself. I'm not going to talk now about the lucid dream and meeting her in that dream or her coming to you in your dream. This is a subject, however, which is imminent and something to be discussed in a vivid and ever-deepening manner as we proceed. I just would like to point out that a number of members of the crew almost each week report to me on encounters they have with animals and birds. I'm informed that the presence of snowy owls in North America has increased fourfold. White animals, white birds, the white buffalo calf born in the American West, the great, great omen of white buffalo calf woman, who is to say a representation both of the spirit of the wilderness, Matangi, in the Shakti cluster, but also of the organic light visualized as a power animal. And it goes on from there. How many of you have told me of the extraordinary encounters you have with animals during or after making the Gaian Tantric vow? There is clear evidence in your reports and observations that the animals and creatures of this planet our crawling and winged friends, our four-legged brothers and sisters, are coming to us. Their curiosity is aroused. Something is also stirring in them, in their minds, in their hearts, in the souls of these animals, in the spirit of these great and beautiful non-human animals. They are coming to the human animal, the unique species in this divine experiment, and they are looking to us now with renewed curiosity, with expectation, with wonder. They are asking, "Hey brother, hey sister, what's up? What are you doing? Do you get the drift? Do you see what's happening? Do you feel how the planetary animal mother is lifting us into her dream?" And we want to know, we, the snakes, the crickets, the butterflies, the white owls, all the birds of the sky, the animals in the wood and in the deep jungle, we want to know what you are going to do as you respond to her, as you enter consciously the rush of the dreaming attention. So what or who is an Hetaira, and what does that have to do with Gaia's awakening and with the unique moment in correction that is now unfolding? Well, I refer you back again to the configuration in the sky. Here it is, 7:30 in the evening in Belgium. And when I pull up stellarium.org, because it is configured for my location, that's actually configured for Spain, but there's not that much difference, it shows me immediately what the sky looks like at this time of day. And when I go to the west, I see that the sun is about ready to go down. It is in the constellation of the Fishes. The Fishes is descending. And there on the western horizon is the crescent moon, very close to the planet Jupiter, standing directly in front of the gaze of the satanic mask of Cetus. And then, slightly above Jupiter, Venus, and above Venus, the Pleiades, almost in an exact line, with Venus being halfway toward the Pleiades. You notice every night, with some shock and delight, how rapidly Venus moves, how it is pulled away, since its exact alignment with Jupiter on March 13th, it's only 10 days now, 12 days, and it has rapidly advanced, moving from Jupiter in the direction of the Pleiades, which it reaches, as I noted, on April 3rd. So I ask those of you who would care to follow the celestial omens to observe, to keep Stellarium on your screen while you're listening to this briefing. And as you contemplate this magnificent spectacle, along with countless other people around the world who are looking at it without the faintest idea of what they're seeing, you bring the power of your imagination into play. You bring your spirit. You bring the attitude of gratitude and the attitude of delight and wonder, and you bring your conscience to engage with the cosmos. By gazing at this constellation of factors, you bring your conscience itself into engagement with the cosmos. And the silent gazing is itself a kind of vow, a kind of commitment. But a commitment to what? Remember the Dakini syntax that represents the meeting of Venus and Jupiter. Venus is pleasure, Jupiter is guidance. When they meet, they converse, they do a dance of exchange, a dyadic dance of exchange, of reciprocity. Venus converses on the guidance of pleasure, and Jupiter converses on the pleasure of guidance. I recall exactly what I was doing when I received that Dakini syntax. And I must point out that I wasn't alone. And I must point out that a great deal of what I do as a Tertan and as a Nahual, some of it I do alone, of course, some of it I can only do alone. Particular things I do on Infinity Ridge or on the Hill of the Nymphs or the Hill of the Ava Gardner Oaks behind my house. Particular deep explorations of the Nahual I do on my own. But I can tell you with great delight that a large part of the instructions and practices in the Terma of Gaia Awakening have come to me in the presence of a woman. Not always the same woman, or not always a woman with whom I have any kind of permanent or lifetime contact. No. What the powers of the Gaian mystery require is simply the presence of man and woman to each other in naked honesty and respect and in delight and gratitude. And that presence to each other, holding each other in that presence, presents them with a vessel through which they can present their teaching to our species. So I have received a good part of the teaching of the Terma of Gaia Awakening in dialogue with women. And so on March 13th, I found myself standing on the terrace of my house in Andalusia in the presence of a Matangi woman who had come from the Isle of St. Croix in the Caribbean. And that was Micaiah. And in the delight of her presence and the easy flow of company that we provided for each other, we stood there, wrapped up in shawls, gazing out and upward toward the western sky, riveted literally by the power of this magnificent sight. And I said to Micaiah, you know, I've been thinking about this for days. I've been watching the conjunction form, and I've been asking myself, well, what are these two doing? What is Venus doing with Jupiter? Some of you may know that I recently did a talk with Suzanne Toro in which I spoke of the initiation rites of the goddess of Eros and Aphrodite, which took place thousands of years ago and over a long period of time in the Middle East and other parts of the Far East as well. And in that rite of Hieroscamus, the priestess who represented Gaia Sophia was an hetaira. She was an hetaira. That is to say, an adept of pleasure, an adept of luxurious sexual and amatory delight. That is an hetaira. And mated to her, coupled to her in that scenario that I described at that time, was, of course, the man who would be king, the warrior man, the male, who represented Mars in relation to the Hetaira, who represented Venus. So I have been contemplating for quite some time recently the union and the marriage, as it were, of Mars and Venus. We know that this is an ancient theme. It's a theme in ancient mythology as well as in medieval classical folklore and also medieval and Renaissance lore. The marriage of Venus and Mars. So when you see Venus and Mars together, you naturally think of that scenario. But I was asking myself, I said to Micaiah, you know, well, what's the marriage of Venus and Jupiter? Jupiter is not the warrior. It is not the consort of Venus. It is not the counterpart to Venus, as Venus being archetypal female, Mars being archetypal male, if you will. No, there's a different meeting taking place here. A different kind of exchange. What happens when Venus and Jupiter meet? Jupiter is the guru. Jupiter is the great teacher. Jupiter is the hierophant. So what happens when the hetaira meets the hierophant? And my imagination was shuddering like the engine of a Formula One Maserati going around a curve as I contemplated this question. What happens when the hetaira meets the hierophant? What are they doing together? This is not the rite of Hierosgamos that would be represented celestially by Mars and Venus. So what is it? What is it? And as I was standing there on the terrace in the presence of this Caribbean Matangi, we were both captured in the spell of beauty and the radiance of the sky poured down upon us at that moment. And I felt my whole cellular circuits just clear. They just went clear. And then it's like you see water falling on a pond. Water, soft, steady rain falling on the mirror surface of a pond. And in that way, the wisdom of the divine Sophia rains down into your mind. The rain of wisdom, and it is like rain. And I just said spontaneously without thinking, well, they're having a conversation. And she said, what's it about? And I said, well, they're talking about the pleasure of guidance and the guidance of pleasure. Because Jupiter, who is the Hierophant and the Guru, Brihaspati, the priest of Jupiter in ancient Vedic times, represents the guide. The great teacher is the one who guides. And so I saw before myself on that evening, and I still do each evening now, I saw the hetaira and the hierophant who guides humanity. And I saw them meeting and conversing. And then I watch now, as you watch as well, the hierophant remains vigilant and steady at his post, literally eyeballing through the satanic mask of Cetus, literally staring down the monstrous evil. Manifested in human behavior. While the hetaira, like a messenger, hurries onward, she moves on toward the Pleiades and she enters the chamber of the seven sisters, who are the seven hetaira. And that event occurs and can be observed in very short time on the 3rd of April, 2012. And as I pointed out in Nav Briefing 4, if you're using stellarium.org, you orient, you set it up for your location, then you wheel it around so that you're looking west. And if you press the plus button on your keyboard, it will advance the sky one day at a time. The minus button will go back one day at a time. If you advance it with the plus and minus button using the control button, it will move it for 1 hour at a time. So position Venus right side by side with Jupiter on the 14th of March, and then click the plus button. You'll see the crescent moon move through past Jupiter, past Venus and the Pleiades as it's doing right now. And if you continue, you see Venus reach the Pleiades on the 3rd of April. Now, this is something that cannot be denied. And many people are watching this as I speak around the world. But in this experiment, we have the privilege to internalize this event And I assure you, my friends, that if you take the time to do so, following the suggestions of method that I'm making, it's very likely that your life will never be the same again as it has been. Because the power of this omen is such that it can bring to awakening in the human mind and soul and in the collective memory of our species something that we have been missing for a very, very long time. And that remembrance leads back to the moment of the gender rift, which Sophia herself is now recalling. There was a moment in the 9 episodes of the Sophianic Vision story when the divine Sophia sheared the Anthropos template. She actually tore part of it away. What you want to do is envision a scarf being flushed down a drain. Imagine if you had a silk scarf, a long, very light, thin silk scarf, and you dropped it in a drain, circular drain, and so that it floated in a circle like a Ouroboros, like a serpent devouring its tail. Then imagine if you flush the water out of that drain, the Coriolis effect in the northern hemisphere causes the water to rotate counterclockwise. And as it does, it pulls that scarf down into a tight spiral and down the drain. And this is what happened to a section of the Anthropos template at a moment when the divine Sophia was in a dead pitch of de-escalation from her state of pure organic light into a planetary body. At an extremely intense moment in that transformation, she attracted to herself that part of the Anthropos template of the human genomic design that carries the feminine gender. And she incorporated the seeds of the feminine gender into the earth itself. This is a fact. This is a cosmological fact. And I am absolutely convinced that within the coming years, if you need scientific verification, if you need biological verification, that it is due to appear one way or another, that the myth is veracious and it can be confirmed in that way, if you care for that kind of confirmation. But what we say, to make a long story short, is what the sorcerers of the great basin of the Amazon say, and it's kind of a joke among them. If you read the book, The Three Halves of Ino Mosho by Cesar Calvo, C-A-L-V-O, you'll hear that he recounts this anecdote. Yes, sorcerers of the Amazon chuckle and they have a joke. First of all, they say it's that humanity has been here for at least 20 million years. They recognize, they remember 20 million years ago, human beings were walking around what was then the basin of the Amazon, as it may have looked at that time. And they laugh and they poke each other with the elbow because it's an inside joke. And they say, oh yes, the first men were already here that long ago. But the first men were women. Some indigenous people know, some don't know, some have lost the story. You and I, and anyone who joins this experiment from this moment on, now has the opportunity to recover that story. In doing so, you realize the fantastic truth of it all, that the first human beings on this planet were exclusively women, and that they took the form of trees, or women who could shape shift into trees and back into women again. And these are the arboreal nymphs of our precious Gaia. These are the ancestors of the Hittites. Hetaira. And the Hetaira who appear now, the Hetaira who come on board, are the women who know this story and who identify with their true ancestry. The Gaian she, as they were called in Celtic literature. S-I-D-H-E, pronounced she. Very close to the Sanskrit word stri, S-T-R-I, meaning woman. So you have in Sanskrit, in the tantric jargon, the word stri puja, meaning woman worship. The stri, the she, the Gaian arboreal nymphs are the ancestors of the women of today who live consciously as instruments of Gaia's dreaming, and they are here now. They are awake. They are hearing these words. The omen of remembrance signals the moment when we stand together, men and women. As Micaiah and I stood together on that terrace in an awesome recognition. And that recognition can only happen inside the recognition of who she is, the planetary animal mother. When we mutually recognize who she is, we acquire a power of recognition for each other as men and women that is amplified beyond anything that has ever yet to occur on this planet. And this recognition of man and woman together is key to the awakening of Gaia Sophia, and key, it is our component contribution to her correction. It is the first part of our component contribution, and it is the foundational component. There may be, there certainly will be other components and factors of our contribution to correction to be revealed in the time ahead. But this one is laid down now. And this one, the recognition of man to woman and woman to man, is the foundation of all to follow. And you have my word on that. You have my sacred word, and that is such. Now let's return to this moment and to the Dakini syntax that is catalytic to the omen of remembrance. When the Hetaira meets with the Hierophant, they discuss the pleasure of guidance and the guidance of pleasure. When I got this syntax, it was like a domino effect. But the dominoes are more like the big slabs of Stonehenge. And these Stonehenge dominoes are toppling all through my imagination. And at moments like this, which are completely accessible to you as well, and which come as you cultivate the power of the second attention, at moments like this, I have to say it sounds trivial and trite perhaps, but the most immense cosmic revelations become self-evident and you stand there with your jaw open because it is so clear. See, I had been struggling for a while with finding the syntax. There's nothing to really struggle about, by the way. It's kind of an indulgence. I don't need to struggle. I know well enough by now that when Dakini syntax comes all by itself. It is cogent, coherent, lucid, and it cannot be elaborated. This is something that you have to take as a clue from what the Tibetans teach about, the Tibetans in Dzogchen tradition teach about Rigpa and about the primordial mental processes of Rigpa. That they are mental processes. There is not a lack of cognition, a lack of cogitation. There is cogitation, but it is non, it cannot be elaborated. It appears as a crystal clear elixir of truth in the NLP circuits of your mind. And it is stunning. And if you're not delighted and thrilled then you're not getting it. So I had an experience of that kind. And it completely released me into the understanding that I now share with you. I can't tell you the pleasure that I feel in doing so. My brothers and sisters, my mothers, my fathers, my children, or just my friends and allies, I can't tell you the pleasure it gives me to say what I'm going to say right now. My struggle, the slight block that I was having as I observed this conjunction take form, was due to a tendency in my NLP to personalize these two planets. Now, that's natural. We all have the tendency to personalize the planets. We have the tendency to think, who would these be as entities? What would the correlations to Jupiter and Venus be, as entities in our world? There is a reflection of the realm of human relations in this magnificent conjunction. And who would it be, Who would be represented by Venus and by Jupiter? I was particularly troubled by Jupiter because I had received the release of my cognition in the word Hierophant. I knew when I looked at Jupiter, I said, I saw the Hierophant. Jupiter is the Hierophant. But like, who is the Hierophant? What man is this? Am I the Hierophant? Am I going to say that I'm the Hierophant that is announced by this conjunction? Who is the Hierophant? I'm certainly a Hierophant. The Nahual is a Hierophant. The word Hierophant comes from a Hiero, meaning sacred thing, as in Hieros Gamos, and the Greek verb phanein, which means to show. So the Hierophant was the one who showed the sacred. And as I explained in Not in His Image, there were two ways to view the organic light. One was through the apoptia, when the neophyte was brought to a condition of observation by the Hierophant, so that the Hierophant pointed out to the neophyte how to observe the organic light. That's the role of the Hierophant, to reveal the presence of the sacred. Well, I've done that. I've done that with several people. And anyone who does that is the Hierophant. The other way of viewing the organic light was the autopsia, and that is when you come to the perception of a steady observation of the organic light. You come to a state, of steady observation of the organic light all by yourself. That's the autopsia. So the Hierophant was there along with 12 people. There was a group of 13, the Hierophant being the 13th, taking 12 neophytes into the Telesterium at Eleusis and into the magnificent pillared temples of Syria, of Antioch, of Damascus, in the depths of night, with just enough flame thrown on these white pillars to assist the perception of the organic light. So I thought, okay, well, what does all this mean? Well, the Hierophant is back. Well, what does it mean? Well, it means that the Hierophantic activity is back. So part of what this omen tells us is that the moment has come for an increased and shared activity of observing the organic light. And I'm getting indications of this from some of the crew input, people who are writing me. I discussed with Kundry the observation of the plaster effect. That is a hierophantic technique of autopsia, of observing it by your own power, but the technique is given by the Hierophant. And I expect more of this, these observations to happen and to come to more and more people. And you and the crew will happily and delightedly share your observations together. This comes forth now with the powerful imminence of this omen. So how am I doing? Well, if you like that so far, hold on, because you're going to love what comes next. So I see, okay, I'm looking at the Hierophant standing there on the terrace. And sometimes by myself, then in the company of my visitor from the realm of the Caribbean. And I'm looking at Venus, I'm looking at Jupiter, and looking back and forth, and I'm saying, okay, well, what is Venus? The priestess of Eros and Aphrodite, who initiates warriors into the true rites of kingship, that is not like the patriarchal system of theocracy, but the genuine goddess-based system. What is she doing talking to the Hierophant? And who is she now? And who is the Hierophant now? Well, just by contemplating these planets over a number of nights in the sky, after I got the initial syntax, they are discussing the pleasure of guidance and the guidance of pleasure. Just by observing, just by the enjoyment of that sight, the remainder of the omen came to me, and it revealed itself with such utter simplicity and beauty. Venus does not represent one particular woman and will not be personified or embodied in one particular woman. I suggest that Venus is the Hetaira, and I suggest that you consider the word Hetaira, which is from the Greek word Hetaira, meaning courtesan. Consider it as both the singular and plural form. So as a woman, you can say this to yourself. You can say, I am Hetaira. I am the woman. I am Hetaira. It is not merely a title, though. You are actually Hetaira in your female embodiment. But we can also use the same word, Hetaira, for the plural. Venus, the Hetaira, goes into the chamber of the seven sisters, the Hetaira. The seven sisters, the sisterhood of Gaian priestesses, that is the Hetaira. And every single member of that divine sisterhood, that sacred sisterhood, is an Hetaira. So wonderfully, the word Hetaira provides us with an NLP cueing that is absolutely liberating, absolutely superb. It identifies each individual woman in her role of the Pleiadian priestess. And it identifies the company of Pleiadian sisters. There's a lot to say about the Pleiades right now and in the coming weeks regarding correction. You'll remember from my talk on the initial conditions of correction that the reason why the Aeon Sophia was pulled from the Pleromic Center into the region of the third galactic arm, where the Pleiades are located, more or less, was because she ought to have used the spindle of the Pleiades to perform the experiment that she conceived unilaterally, independent of her consort, Thelete. But she didn't. She didn't know how to use that technique because she is a young Aeon. At that time, she was only like comparable to a 14 or 15-year-old girl, a tremendous prodigy. And Thelete also, a 20 or 21-year-old boy, also a prodigy. We, the human species, are the creation of those two prodigies. But Sophia, in her unilateral dreaming of a three-body experiment, could only have brought about the conditions of that experiment by using the instrument of narrative spooling, as I explained. That is to say, by winding her anoia, the projection of her divine intention, around the spindle of the Pleiades. And she didn't do so. Hence, she was pulled out into the galactic arms by the very power of her own intention. So the Hetaira The sisters of the Pleiades must in some way be intimately informed about this event in the life of the divine Sophia. They must feel it, empathize with it, and understand it, take it upon themselves. And they, I don't say must in the sense of obligation or as if anyone is pressuring them. I say it in the sense of the upsurgence of this wisdom within their souls and minds and bodies as women, as hetaira. This is the role, if you will. This is the direction. This is the role that women play who contribute now and in the future to the correction of the divine Sophia. All this was revealed to me in the reign of wisdom, in the cellular awakening of the divine epinoia in the ribosomes, and it's the same for everyone. It's the same process. It's the same wisdom for everyone. Remember that in planetary tantra, you don't have just one piece of the story, and I have another, and Tom has another, and Susan has another. We all have the entire story, and we develop it together. Now, in concluding this talk, let's turn to Jupiter. That was a little more challenging because I thought, well, what is this Jupiter component? I mean, how are we going to see this Hierophant manifesting? Are we going to see some world teacher emerge? Are we going to see somebody come forth within the framework of the initial conditions of correction who hasn't yet appeared, who represents the Hierophant reborn, the Hierophant living today, and that is the male counterpart to the Hetaira. And I had been, you know, taxing my mind over this a little bit, not too much, but a little bit. And I have to tell you that although I'm capable of extravagant acts of arrogance, it never occurred to me that I would consider myself to be that person. Of course, I am a hierophantic figure, and I have, I have achieved and do perform a hierophantic role, but I knew that that wasn't it. I knew that that wasn't it. No, not at all. There's something much more elegant being shown here. And again, standing on the terrace, just allowing the beauty of this spectacle to pour into my eyes, I saw in the dreaming attention that the Hierophant is not a man, it's not any man, and it shall never be any man. What is the Hierophant then? What is that which in right now in human history takes up the role of the ancient Hierophants who revealed the sacred to the neophytes in the mystery schools? If it's not a man, if it's not a person, what is the Hierophant represented by Jupiter? It's the Terma of Gaia awakening. That is the Hierophant. You see, there are so many special and original opportunities in the correction of the divine Sophia that if you're into the process, you're going to find yourself suffering from an abundance of riches. There is so much in this practice by which we participate in her awakening. So much that changes everything, that makes everything look different. Always in the past, no matter how you cut it, when it came to the male role of guide or guru, it was always the same old story. The male teacher, the male guru, the messiah. Look at all the masterminds of the 20th century. Look at all Sri Aurobindo. I can't even begin to name them, you know. It's Sri Yukteswar, you know, Yogananda, all these male masterminds. Look at Oliver Reiser. Look at Dane Rajar. Look at Ken Wilber. Look at all these men. And then look at me. And you'll see immediately that I'm not in the category of any of those men, because I'm not a male hierophant in that sense, because I'm not part of the old paradigm of the male wisdom agent. In my dream of life, in my participation in her magic and mystery, the terma of Gaia awakening is the Hierophant. The terma is the Hierophant. The teaching itself, not the one who teaches. The terma of Gaia awakening is the guide. And combined with the hetaira of womanhood, there you have it. There you have the magical combination that allows us to enter into direct interaction with the correction of the divine Sophia. There, in that combination, which you can go out and look at in the sky this evening, is the initialization of the human role in her correction, our contribution to an aeonic presence and an aeonic activity. Just take that on board. You know, the paradigm in the past, the male paradigm of spiritual teaching, even at its very best, has been one in which the male presents a master paradigm, as Siddhartha presented the initial teachings of Buddhism to the world, or some other male mastermind down through the ages presented a metanoic system of illumination and guidance. The guru, the guru, the guru is always male. And in every preceding instance, this male guru figure, sometimes adorned in messianic robes and in messianic pretensions, has actually gotten in the way of the message that he was delivering. I myself had a great fear that that would happen with the Sophianic message after I wrote my book, Not in His Image. I have to say, quite honestly, I have absolutely no fear of that anymore. I really don't. I know with absolute certainty and confidence that even though I am the Tertan who received the term of Gaia Awakening, I as a man and teacher do not stand in the way of the terma to be the teacher itself. And I am free. I am free. Every preceding version of the male mastermind guru has presented a teaching that became authoritative. You had to follow the authority and you had to obey that teaching. You had to observe and obey the teaching of the man, which meant to observe and obey the man. But nobody has to observe and obey me. And there is nothing further from my mind that I could ever, ever imagine. You observe the terma, and you do not even obey the terma, because there's nothing to obey. It instructs you to planetary tantra. And what is that? Well, look on metahistory.org and see what it says on the banner. Interactive magic with Gaia. This is what the terma of Gaia Awakening teaches. The terma is the guru. The terma is the hierophant. And how wonderful is that? It gets us all off the hook. And so there you have it. There's an attempt, a first attempt, first approach to elucidate the omen of remembrance, the omen that appears in the spring sky of that momentous year, 2012. This is a moment of commencement of a sublime and vast remembering. And in future talks, it's my intention to flesh out this remembering for you, if I will, to flesh out this remembering process and to give you some narrative guidelines as a storyteller to what we shall be remembering. And I would use the future perfect tense, which I enjoy using because it kind of gives me a chance to try out Vox City. I would use it on this occasion and say, by the time we reach the end of correction, those of us who have stayed with this process will have remembered what it takes for our species' participation in this process. I suggested long ago, in the early days of metahistory.org, when I was writing about sharing the Gaia mythos, that humanity might function as a memory circuit in the superorganism of the planet. And I can happily repeat that statement today and say that it is now proven to be so, and I can invite you all to prove it for yourselves. And what a wonderful experiment and what a wonderful process of discovery this is bound to be. The delight and the beauty of this conjunction communicates itself into our minds with the power of the goddess, with the power of her own self-discovery and self-recalling. And she weaves us into her future on the rush of the dreaming attention. It's just sunset now. I can see outside. The sky, by the way, for the last 2 days in Belgium, has been absolutely flawless. I see planes flying by with short contrails. The pale blue of the sky. And certainly, when I go downstairs now and step out in the field, there they shall be. And so we're all together in this observation. We're able to use this conjunction to bring our minds and imaginations together to unite the first and second attention in the practice in an ever more effective manner. And bear in mind that when you do this practice, you are never alone. You are doing it not only with others around the world who are doing planetary tantra. Their numbers don't matter. What matters is the conscientiousness and the grounding they bring to the experiment. You're not only doing it with them, with those members of the crew who are now on board and those who are due to come on board, but you're doing it with the earth itself. You are dreaming with the earth, the story of her past, the story of her present, the story of her future. And in this story, you live, and there is no other place to live but there. So thank you for your attention. I'm following up these NAB briefings with more during the course of the week. It's my great pleasure and privilege to be your navigator. And I wish you all safe passage. Until the next time.